back. Yes, sir. You, and then, now this guy in the back had his hand up first. Now you, come on. Come on. Yeah, you're the one.
Mr. Gouillet.
You in the blue shirt before you sit down again. You're next. Okay? Stay right there. And then you over here with the black collar. You're next. And then you're next with the hoodie. The lady with the hoodie. You guys just need to line up, okay?
Let's get passes on down, please.
There you go.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Wheatley, members of the Planning and Zoning Commission, Mr. Lack, Mr. Robertson, Mr. Abbott. Happy New Year to you all. Another new year, another...
We need your name for the record.
Oh, Henry Glowiak, Jr., and I am Vice President of the Inland Bays Foundation, and I live near Lewis. And wish you Happy New Year, and another new year on the assault for our inland bays, of course. In my 40 years of coming into these chambers, spending all my adult life watching my beautiful Sussex County just totally deteriorate in, as far as quality of life goes, this is one of the more rare cases where it's just, this whole proposal of for this development just flies in the face of all the work that has been done by the Center for the Inland Bays, by the state of Delaware, DENREC, by members of county council, and most of the stakeholders involved in ensuring that Sussex County follows a plan of orderly development that ensures the quality of life, the safety, health, and welfare of the people of Sussex County and others. This proposed development is to be located in an area of Rehoboth Bay that is the worst stressed. The north side of Rehoboth Bay, shellfishing is limited. Certain times of year, you may get shellfish out of there. Other times, it's totally forbidden. That is the most stressed area of Rehoboth Bay, and we're going to put a development right on it. You've heard, I'm not going to repeat all the testimony that has already been said about all the flooding problems and all that. One of my favorite spots to go and just look at the inland bays and enjoy them is the state launch area at Mulberry Knoll Landing. Right, you look right across the creek and you can see where the golf course is. You can see where this would all be developed. And, you know, to me it's just another part of the nightmare that's been happening here in Sussex County. I handed some things over to Mr. Lank, and I hope you all have a copy of it. This is this was put out by the Center for the Inland Bays. all the studies, some of the, you know, there have been a lot of studies done on the inland bays. They've been studied to death, in my opinion, since 1969. We all know what to do to remediate and to reverse the process as it's been deteriorating our inland bays for a long time. Part of that, and it has been briefly mentioned in testimony of others today, is impervious surface. Okay? Now, what I've handed out to you folks is, like I said, a publication put out by the Center for the Inland Bays. And you can see at the top of the map there, now this is as of 2006-2007. The Center for the Inland Bays and DENREC went ahead and agreed upon, and I think there was some memorandum of understanding about how this all enters in with impervious surface, how it all enters into the equation. After all, you have mentioned things about impervious surface in your comp plan. Well, as of 2006, 2007, it's already over the threshold. For the 40 years in all my adult life, I've always been hearing this thing when it comes to planning and land use. This one little mantra all the time, balance, 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 balance. Let's balance the ecology, the health of the ecology with economic development and development in general. Well, we have figured out a way to develop where the balance threshold is. And there it is, 10%. We are above that, way above that. And like I said, the area being most affected is the northern end of Rehoboth Bay. I don't understand why we have all these studies, all the hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars. We establish a center for the inland bays who have their hands tied and can't say too much. They can only educate, try to educate anyway. One nice thing about my organization, we can lobby and litigate, which is very good. Something that the Center for the Inland Bays can't do. We can say things they can't say. We're all reading off the same page, though, which is nice. But the amount of development proposed on this extremely sensitive piece of land would just further and further deteriorate the quality of water in the inland bays. I have to remind everyone that the state of Delaware in 1997 went under a court case from the Widener Law Institute, Ken Crystal being the lawyer there, and he brought the state of Delaware to task to bring us and make us compliant with the Federal Clean Water Act. Show me, and you know all about, I don't need to educate you all about TMDLs and all that stuff. It's all in the information. I'm sure you've all done your homework on that. Show me how this proposed development will actually decrease nutrients going into the water, which was actually stated in the goals and policies of what we're trying to do to save our inland bays. It's, I'm sure you've all seen the, you know, it's like this development they're trying to portray it as a development in a bubble. You've probably seen the TV show The Dome. You know, how can they expect you to believe or me to believe that developing this property in the way they are proposing to do it will actually decrease nutrients going into the inland bays? How? No way possible. No way possible. How are we going to meet the Federal Clean Water Act, the mandate that we are under? If you approve this, we can't. The other, you know, worst case, I'd like to see this would be a prime piece of property to preserve. It really would. And there's ways to do it, sure. It takes money, of course. And I don't know, right now the state of Delaware says they're broke. They don't have any money for infrastructure, for road improvements, to keep up with all the development that's being approved by Sussex County all the time. You know, it takes money, sure. But if we simply follow existing laws and not upzone this from AR1, you know, I'm trying to be practical here. And the very least thing I expect to come out of this that would show me, give me a little glimmer of hope that there's some hope left to preserve what we have left in eastern Sussex County is to deny the zoning change and keep it as AR1. That's the official stance of the Inland Bays Foundation. And on a personal note, you know, I'm still here after all these years coming in here, and I've seen a lot of you come and go. I remember the good old days of Jack Allen, all that stuff. And in my personal opinion, and I'm probably going to pull a Till Purnell one of these days, where I'm sure what you heard what she did. She just told county council, you killed my county, I'm leaving, and she did, and she never came back. I own a piece of property out in Accomack County. They got great programs to protect the Shingate, their coastal bays down there, Shingate Bay and all that. I'm getting ready to move there. You won't have to see me around here anymore, which would be one less headache for you. But before I do, I'm going to give my last breath to fight for my homeland, to fight for where, you know, I was born, written, and spent most of my life. To me, and personally thinking, I just already think Sussex, Eastern Sussex, ruined. I mean, after all, even if not another single building lot was approved for development, you got 16,000 approved lots in the pipeline right now. Even if you weren't to do approve another thing, I don't know how we're ever going to keep up. I don't know how we're going to improve the quality of our land bays, infrastructure. Somebody's going to have to pay for it. It's going to, in the end, it's going to be higher taxes for all of us. Something the county council is very proud to say, we keep taxes low, and it's an unsustaining way to do it through the transfer tax. But there are so many issues that complicate this whole process. I really don't hold that much hope at all for Eastern Sussex, and it's a shame, and it really has killed my spirit. And you know, I can almost, and I have, I've just broke down and cried, because I remember growing up. I know most of this audience out here, most of them are transplants. They didn't have the great joy and the great times I had growing up, going out of Rehoboth Bay, Indian River Bay, and water was clean. You could catch as much as you want, fish, crabs, clams, everything. In my lifetime, I've just seen it deteriorate. I don't even recognize it anymore. It's sad. And the members of county council, I know you folks don't have anything to do with our ordinances or all that, but our folks on county council who have approved and totally destroyed our quality of life in Eastern Sussex County, citing property rights like the old slaveholders of the South did. You know, civil wars fought over property rights. Well, county council, those members who have done this to us, they will go down on the wrong side of history, just like the old slaveholders of the South. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, sir, step right up.
I'm only going to show a couple slides.
Again, is this something that can be transmitted to the office so we can make sure it's part of the record?
It's already loaded up on your computer, so enjoy it. I'm giving it to you.
All right, I just want to make sure. I don't want it to be lost. That's all. Okay.
Well, who knows? My name's Steve Britz. I am on the board of directors of Webb's Landing, a community on Love Creek. So I have a vested interest in Love Creek. I'm the vice chair of the Citizens Advisory Committee of the Center for Inland Bays. I have a PhD in biology, 40 years of research, and about 100 published papers. That said, I would like to make a couple extra points about the interaction between impervious surfaces and hydric soils. I bet you're thinking you couldn't say anything more.
I'm also thinking you're going to.
You got it. So here we see the soils map of the property in question. The red areas are the hydric soils, and indicate that they're very limited in this case for the construction of dwellings without basements. As has been mentioned, they're composed of broadkill and manahawk and mucks. But there's about 40 acres in what's called Falsington Loam. Now, the Falsington Loam tends to form in shallow depressions, and I think you can kind of see there's a low area here, these well-drained soils up here. The green areas indicate well-drained soils, and down here, a slightly higher elevation. And if you were to look at a topographic map, you'd see that there's a narrow stream bed that comes in here. Now, these are the areas that pond up during heavy rain events. We don't even have to have sea level rise or things like that. Now, if we were to exclude even these from consideration for construction and put in high density construction in the green areas, so lots of impervious surfaces from rooftops, driveways, sidewalks, whatnot, that's going to increase the runoff from these areas, and a part of that's going to go in here, whereas before it had been draining into these soils and accumulating here. So that should increase even more the amount of water that ponds up in an area like this. And some of that will drain out through this slight depression here, but it does so obviously slowly. Now, if you were to do construction in here to block that efflux of water from this area, it's going to pond up more, it's going to drain more slowly. If you have construction in this area with additional impervious surface, that just further limits the amount of drainage. You're going to get more and more water accumulating in this area. And where is that water going to go? Well, I think it's going to go over here to sawgrass. So I think that the plan that's been put forward, and even a reduced level of development limited to the well-drained soils, runs the risk of endangering surrounding communities. And so my point is, now I understand there's a balance between having a fully fleshed out plan for development and sort of a speculative plan, but I think more thought and effort has to be given to the how you're going to deal with stormwater drainage in this area. So it was news to me tonight to hear that they're going to be grandfathered into the old system and with detention ponds and things like that. But this area is also low. I really question whether that's going to work. You got to get some real, I'm not an expert. You got to get some real experts here to evaluate this and come up with a system that's going to work. Sussex County, not surprisingly, has lots of hydric soils. And I came across this 2009 DENREC response to a PLUS document for the NovaCell development. This is on Robinsonville Road across from Webb's Landing. And where they mentioned, the interaction between hydric soils and the increase in impervious surfaces. I'll let you read that at your leisure. But they do go on to say that based on Chapter 99, Section 16A of the Sussex County Code, which is still in effect, lands that are compromised by improper drainage or flooding potential pose significant threats to the safety and general welfare of future residents and therefore shall not be developed. So it's in the laws of the county that this shouldn't be done. Soil, and DENREC goes on to state then that soils mapped as Falsington fit the criterion for improper drainage or high flooding potential and should be avoided. Again, this is from the watershed assessment section at DENREC. And in 2014, in the DENREC response to the PLUS for Osprey Point, therefore, we strongly recommend that the applicant avoid the said soil mapping units, meaning, of course, the hydric soils. So my conclusion is that the request for rezoning should be denied pending a more detailed and more environmentally responsible plan. And thank you. That's all I have to say.
All right, sir. Thank you. Okay, who's next? All the way in the back, the dark collar. And then the lady with the blue hoodie, and then the, yeah, you.
My name is Ed Reinex. I represent the Meadows, the Villages of Old Landing, and on the board.
Hey, guys, pipe down. This guy's got the floor. Go ahead.
I'm on the board of directors there. I'm not representing the board or the community, just myself. But I did want to go on record with you. And I'll make this succinct because I want to get home before breakfast. I came from a county. I'm a transplant. And the county I came from developed after World War II. And it was all agricultural. That's Fairfax County. It was all agricultural land, and through the years, the Board of Supervisors, everything grew exponentially to the point where the gavel went down, the subdivisions went in, a lot of the studies were done, but whatever the builder, it was a builder-driven go-go county, and now the roads are inadequate, the traffic is horrendous. As you may know, in the Washington area. So we come down here, and we know the traffic during the summer is one issue, and I see a lot of the cornfields are being developed, which is not surprising. A lot of the retirement people are coming down here for tax reasons and so forth, as we did. But my concern, I'm a retired auditor, and I kind of like dealing in facts. So I'm trying not to get an opinion out here, but with 350 units, if it goes through, it'd be roughly 700 cars, maybe vehicles, give or take, maybe 12 to 1,400 people. The roads right now are inadequate to handle not only Old Landing Road to handle that community, but 24 Warrington and so forth. So I can imagine that number of vehicles going down, plus maintenance vehicles, guests, and so forth. I feel bad for the loss of the golf course. It's beautiful. It'd be nice for the county or the state to buy it, parkland. Probably won't happen, but I just want to go on record as give us some thought, rationale, and
well, maybe Fairfax County would buy it.
Yeah, they have a couple dollars. They do indeed. But I appreciate your time.
I'm sure it could be bought.
Yeah, but no doubt it could. But I do appreciate your time, and good luck with the venture.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yes, ma'am, it's your turn.
Just don't shoot me.
I'm not going to shoot you if you don't shoot me. I think I have a little more to fear than you.
Yeah. My name is Linda Freese. It's F-R-E-S-E. I live in Sawgrass South. I am a retired business administrator for Mercer County in New Jersey. I moved here permanently or almost 3 years ago because I wanted a better way of life. I didn't want the crowd, the big county that I was used to working in. And I just want to make a statement. I am not going to address anything that everybody said tonight, but I have to because I have to get this off my chest. Mr. Marshall's attorney mentioned that this is not a popularity contest. This was never a popularity contest. It's never been a contest. It is concerned citizens that all of us are here just because we might outnumber the opponent tonight. It's because we are concerned and we live this. Every single day, we breathe this, we live it. 24/7 a day, we know what it's like out there. We know the flooding issues. We know the crowdedness, the traffic, the intersections, the roads, how bad that they are getting. So this is not a popularity contest. You have citizens here that are so well educated. You have doctors, you have lawyers that are here that are discussing their concerns. So I just want to put on record that we have knowledge. We are learning a lot more than what we knew before. And each day we're learning more and more. And I ask you, as the board and Mr. Chairman, to know that we are here not because we want to outnumber them. We're here because we want a better way of life. And we want to live in an area where it's safe, where the environment, there's protection for the environment. We want our children to be able to have a better way of life. So I just stand here and tell you that this is no way a popularity contest. It is telling you how we feel and doing it the best way that we can with trying to learn all of these aspects in a short period of time that we had. Mr. Marshall had probably a year or 2 years to plan this. We just learned about it, and we might have had a couple months to try to dig all of the information and be able to sort through it. So I object to the fact that this is not a personality contest. This is not a contest. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, sir. You're up.
Well, an interesting act to follow. My name is George Love, 21705 C Street in Rehoboth Bay Community. I drink the water in Rehoboth Bay Community. We have groundwater wells. You've seen quite a bit of talk here about hydric soils. You've seen talk about locations. You've seen talk about flooding. As it turns out, those flooded areas, which do in fact contain hydric soils, also are recharge areas into the aquifer. The aquifer that's beneath there has a transmissivity, that's a rate at which water is moving, between 8 and 12,000 square feet per day. Now, you've heard people talk about living adjacent to it and having private water wells. Those are issues that need to be taken into consideration. I have provided a letter with a number of maps that I don't have for projection, but those things need to be taken, they need to be looked at. I'm not opposed to development, but I am opposed to contaminated fluids, which would be in sedimentation basins, and you heard the civil engineer discuss sedimentation. The water table there is nominally 5 feet. I have that information that's available to you. So a sedimentation basin, which is going to be picking up sediments and dissolved solids that come from impervious surfaces, like roofs, like roads, like road salt and so forth, will be put into that aquifer. And then some of us are going to be drinking that. And to have that kind of material leaving the property, I think, is problematic for me. I'm not opposed to the development, but I do think that it should be a requirement to look and see what the impacts of these sedimentation basins will be on the aquifer, and then filling in the areas with hydric soils, which would be required to meet all those the development. That has the other side of that coin, because now you are eliminating or reducing the infiltration rate into the local aquifer. So folks, water tables could begin to fall, or there could be a saline intrusion into the local aquifer. Those are not things that I know are going to happen. Those are things that need to be evaluated and considered. So I ask that you ask the applicant to take a look at that and have his staff take a look. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Okay, who's next? Well then, I'll ask you one more time.
I have a question.
Okay, Mr. Lank has a question.
Mr. Gunn, in part of your packet, you provided a petition to reject. Do you know what the count on those signatures was?
It was 160. That's the petition for how many signatures?
I can count them. I just was, didn't know if you knew what number was, that's all.
216.
216?
That was an online petition. These were manual.
Oh, these are manual. Yeah.
I haven't seen the online petition.
We didn't do everything
right. Double count, that's no problem. I'm just curious if you didn't do it.
I didn't have a count, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone? Oh, here comes one more.
You'll be happy. This is a whole new issue. Nothing we've talked about.
I promise. So I'm Josephine Hamilton. I live at 21058 Laguna Drive in South Sawgrass. And I was asked to speak to this issue because we actually discovered this early on going through the PLUS report, but it speaks to the State Historic Preservation Office's report on the archaeological site on the property. And I'm surprised it hasn't been brought up yet because it was actually listed on the petition as one of our concerns. So initially, on July 14th, 2014, page 2 of page 22, in response to the findings of the State Preservation Office, or in response to their report, the developer answered that they thanked the State Historic Preservation Office for letting them know about the archaeological site and the dwelling site, and that the developer was aware of possible unmarked human burial and skeleton remains. And so the Delaware Unmarked Human Burial and Human Skeleton Remains Law would be in effect. So, sort of confusing, but on the same day, there was another letter document entered into the PLUS report, page 3 of page 3, where they again acknowledged the site contained a known archaeological site. It was identified what that site was by the state of Delaware. Then, on October 8th of 2014, there was another document entered, 5 pages, and on the third page, under Preservation of Natural and Historic Features, Part B, the SHPO provided the developer with some information regarding a known archaeological site. The site is identified as S7972-7SG129. Terrence Burns of the Bureau of Archaeological and Historic Preservation provided information determining the sites are not located within the Osprey Point property. Well, that was very confusing to me. I looked for the documentation that supported the developer's response. I could find none in the file. So, fortunately, they provided Mr. Terrence Burns' number and name, so I called them. And he informed me that he'd never given that kind of information, that he, in fact, told them or showed them on the map where the site was located, and that we were welcome to come and look at the map anytime we wanted to see it. It was public record. So it took 3 months. We had a lot of hurdles to climb through to get to it. But last Friday, I went and spoke with Mr. Terrence and his boss, Gwen Davis. She's the deputy there at the office. After telling me that I couldn't come and see the map, that this had become a sensitive issue, at one point they told me it had been whited out. This went on from October to December, well, I think it was the 29th. And we went, we had a meeting with them, they welcomed us with open arms. The transparency all of a sudden became clear. They provided us with a map, the site circled on the map. It clearly shows that it's on the property, and I'd like to enter this into the file.
Okay.
Okay. You hand it to Mr. Lunt.
Thank you.
I think he already has.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Anyone on the commission have any questions?
We were going
to
do
Chairman, I would like to.
Well, and I was going to say, I don't know at this point.
Well,
we'll still have it. We've got the sign-in list, too.
And we've got the sign-in list, but we promised them a show of hands. Yeah. We should take one.
On behalf of the commission and staff, I'd like to thank Mr. Brockenbrough and Mr. Cote for being here till almost Friday with us tonight. And
come on, you don't get that big overtime pay. Come on.
Thank you, gentlemen. I hope to see you again.
They don't even get comp time, poor souls.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much for being here.
Anyone else have any other questions?
I do.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe these are easily addressed, but one of the issues that were brought up, and I kind of missed it in looking at the maps, was about the buffer from the other subdivisions. I don't know who you want to have answering this, but obviously we have an issue with the private road that's addressed as Fairway Drive and Clubhouse Drive, and how we have the 12 units that are abutting the Fairway Drive. So, Mr. Fuquay, can you or someone address who's going to maintain those roads and how that responsibility is going to be there, and what do we do after Mr. Marshall passes away if he's the owner of those roads?
Of course, as I stated, Mr. Marshall owns the road. That was the reason we fronted the lots on there. In the conditions I submitted for your consideration, one of those conditions, I don't have it in front of me, but the language is that the owners of those lots would contribute to the maintenance of Fairway Drive in the same manner as the other owners of lots on Fairway Drive, or something to that effect, anyway. In other words, that they would be required to participate equally, and that would be a condition, a restriction on those lots. Part of the idea was that rather than cut that piece out and just develop it as freestanding lots, it was better off to be part of the development and subject to all the restrictions and requirements of the development, and they'd had access to use the recreational facilities and things of that nature.
But what happens to that road? I mean, when Mr. Marshall passes away, I have that issue now with another client.
Well, when he passes away, somebody else is going to own the road.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And ultimately, who becomes responsible?
Well, the owners, as I understand it, and I haven't been involved in that road, but as I understand it, all the people who live on that road in the woods contribute to that. Mr. Marshall, I believe, uses those roads for access to his property. He contributes to the maintenance of it. And again, if these new lots were approved, those people would contribute to the maintenance of it. I'm not familiar with the reference to the other subdivision that's created at the end of the street there, the end of Fairway Drive. But I gather from what was said that those people will have to contribute to it also.
Well, they may contribute to it. I mean, normally we hear that with a subdivision that once it gets spelled out to a certain degree, then it becomes part of the homeowner's responsibility. Homeowners Association takes over basically ownership of that property. But I'm not hearing that with this particular road. And the fact that it sounds like it's impacting maybe two other developments besides this one.
Just the reality is that the Woods at Old Landing was a subdivision that was created, I don't know when it was created, but probably in the 1960s, 78 in the 70s. Apparently at that time there was no requirement that it be part of the road. It was a private road, and that was the way it was created, and that's there and done. Again, all I can address is that anyone new from our development using that road would contribute to the maintenance of the road. As far as the mechanics of balancing the three things, I can't tell you that because there's two other entities that would be involved in it. But if in our restrictions those people are required to do that, then that is a restriction on that lot and they are required to do it.
And where are the buffers? Zach talked earlier about the 20-foot buffers from other subdivisions. Where's the buffers?
Lawrence, how does that buffer requirement read? Do you remember? I don't think it applies to a street, does it?
Well, there's a reference in the on a new project in the subdivision regulation. There's a different way you provide for the buffer along the public roads than there is along the perimeter of the property. In this case, it's a street inside of an existing subdivision where the owner and the applicant are the same person. We'd have to address it, and I'm not sure how that works, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we'll have to look at that.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that right now.
Okay.
Because it wouldn't, if that's the where the lots have frontage on, there wouldn't be a buffer requirement on the frontage. You know, I don't think. That's what we'll have to look
yeah,
at.
Yeah, it's just a different situation than I think you've
I mean, because you went to great lengths talking about your buffer
along the buffer
road.
The adjacent lot is a 20-foot buffer that goes around the perimeter.
You're talking about across Fairway, Zach, on this side, this back side.
This here?
The street right there.
Right.
So 12 lots across from the 7.
I'm talking about this buffer, right?
So you got a buffer on the backside from those houses, but what kind of buffer do you have along those 12 lots?
None.
Yeah.
The road.
I think the road.
Yeah.
And on the south side, is there a buffer provided from the property there?
Yes.
And that runs along the parcel that's not part of this.
But that's a property line, not a street right away. That's a private street right away. That's where we're going to have to look
into. That buffer, where the property line between that 5 acres, I mean, there's still a 20-foot buffer that runs from Old Landing Road all the way to the bay.
Okay, so there's one there.
Yeah.
I just could, when I was looking at the small drawings, I couldn't really make out how big of a buffer we had along there.
There's not one at Fairway Drive,
right?
Where the 7 lots on the north side, and they're proposing 12 on the south side. I think that's what was said.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have a follow-up question on that.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Fuqua, is there an agreement between the homeowners association or between anybody on Fairway Drive for maintenance? Because it's serving 2 other developments, correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not familiar with the details of the... Obviously, the woods maintains that road. I understand from what was said tonight, because I don't know any more about this, that the new development that's at the end of that road will be utilizing that road, and they're contributing to it, too. That's what someone testified to. And then all I'm saying is these lots in our development would add to that. That's all. But I don't know.
You're talking about the Main Street project.
But is that what it's called, Main Street?
Main Street Home.
Is it at the end of Fairway?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. There seems to be some folks with some other information here that I heard that they have to share with us. Go ahead, quickly.
Okay. So just you have to come up just so you
get to come up.
Sorry. And give your name
Richard
again.
Richard Morganti, Lenny Woods Owners right. Association. So the Fairway Drive is owned by Robert Marshall, and he does not contribute to the upkeep of that road. And I asked him several years ago when we were resealing that if he would contribute, and he refused. So he contributes nothing to the upkeep of that road. The people along that road, and this is a problem from the beginning, have maintained that road out of necessity. It was his father before him and now him, as I understood this from the former president. And he does not maintain that road. So we maintain it out of necessity. When that woods at Arnell Creek was built, they were instructed to get in touch with us, which we have, you know, sat down and met with them. But we have yet to get an agreement with them. And now he doesn't respond to my email or phone call. So, you know, we still don't have an agreement with the woods at Arnell Creek. And now they're going to add 12 more and put a covenant on that. So now we're going to have 3 units trying to come up with a way to maintain the road that we don't own. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. It was enlightening. Okay. Anyone else on the commission have any questions? Okay. Why don't we, I think we're going to defer. Why don't we just go ahead and vote on that and we can.
Well, yeah.
Are we leaving the record open for something?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think there's anything else to refer back to.
There's no point to refer. There's nothing to refer back to. So let's go ahead and finish so that when we close the public hearing, we can also adjourn the meeting. Because what's going to happen is if we close the public hearing and we don't adjourn the meeting, all these folks are going to get up and start talking anyway, and we're going to have to wait 10 minutes for them to leave. I want to leave with them.
So, I wanted to leave with the people left earlier.
You don't have that option.
I had on my list just trying to jot things down as we went through, and this isn't meant to be all of them, but just there was kind of 3 main things I know that came up. One was the Corps of Engineers determination.
Yeah, the Corps determination, the letter from
Conservation District.
Conservation District.
And DLDOT said that they were still reviewing the TOA.
So we need to leave the record open for DLDOT comments, the response to DLDOT comments, and then we need a public review period so that the public can come in and look at that data.
Mr. Fuqua may have the answer to one of those.
And for the receipt.
Right, I'm submitting the Army Corps of Engineers.
Okay.
All right, well, we got
Thanks,
that.
Thanks, sir.
So we got Deldot.
Got that other letter coming. But the more important thing is if Deldot's not done, then we need to leave the record open to receive that. And I think we have to give the applicant an opportunity to respond. We also have to give the public an opportunity to see all of that data. So I'm thinking open for that, and then for how much, 10 days, 15 days for a response, and then 15 days for a public
review? Normally do it once we get the responses. We announce it during a public meeting.
Then the clock starts.
We set a time for how much time. Then
we usually give the time, but we need to announce it first. 20 days for the public.
Okay.
To announce it at a public meeting so they can then know how much time they have to respond.
Right.
For written comments only.
Right. And all that's going to take place, but county council is going to go ahead and have their hearing anyway as scheduled. So you get to do all this again. So I didn't want you to think that somehow that would be postponed. That will not be postponed. That will go ahead and proceed. As normal, but we would not be making a decision until all that information is in and the public's had time to look at it, and we've had time to look at anything that the public puts in the file at that point. And then at some point it'll come back on our agenda and a decision will be made.
And then, in county council.
Just a point of information for everyone.
Yes.
When the report does come back to you and you set the time for response,
yeah,
that will just be done at that hearing. In other words, notices aren't going to be sent out to anyone.
Right. Correct. We can put it on an agenda. We've
It'll
done that in the past.
It'll
be on an agenda, and you'll announce at night the time schedule. Just so everybody knows, they're not going to get a notice that these are in. Okay. Right.
So what you can do is go to the website and just look at, just keep watching the agendas. It won't be long, probably, but
okay. Only Deldot one.
Right, guys?
And county council, they will defer pending the receipt of this commission's recommendation. So as Mr. Wheatley said, they will still absolutely have their hearing.
They will absolutely have their hearing. They will not make, typically will not make a decision without our recommendation.
They won't.
They've done it once or twice, but I don't think they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Any questions? So
sure.
Can you do this whole thing again with the council then on the 3rd?
Same thing.
Yep.
Actually, it's the same. It's the same general process, but you should all be aware that the applicant can change their entire presentation. You can change your entire presentation if you want to. So that's it's not that's just the way it works. So.
The application number remains the same.
Everything's
the same.
That's the same. Yep. All that's the same.
But typically happens, the applicant has heard some of your concerns that they didn't hear before, and now they go to council and can address those concerns.
Yeah. I mean, the process works. I mean, it actually makes both sides better. So, anyway.
The council hearing starts at 1:30 in the afternoon, and I believe it's on February 3rd. The file keeps growing.
Yeah. Now, the record will be closed, except for these limited things, for this commission.
Right.
So this commission can't consider anything that's not part of the record before it. But you can keep adding things right up until the date of the county council hearing, and that'll be part of county council's record.
Right. Their file is still open for whatever you want to put in it. Ours is open only for the items we just described.
And any comments regarding those items.
And any responses.
Yes, there will be a comment period that will be established, and anything that comes in the file at that point in time we'll review and consider before we make a decision.
Then you'll make a recommendation.
Exactly.
And the comments that you're going to comment on are the two comments we requested.
Right. Right.
The comments are the comments.
Nothing new. Now, everything in our file goes to council.
Everything, they have everything we have and more.
And everything that you want to submit to council can be submitted to me, through our record.
All goes through.
All goes through the same file, basically.
But when we make our recommendation, it's solely based on the information that we have as of tonight,
plus what
we're leaving open.
A few items we're leaving.
So if the applicant comes back with a changed application, our recommendations may sound strange because we're only responding on tonight
based on what we saw
and our information. So sometimes you'll look at the motions that we submit you'll say, well, where was her head? Because it sounds like a different project.
No, it's,
yeah, it is a different project. Sometimes.
Sometimes. Not much. So. Not too terribly much, but it's not likely that they're going to come back with a site plan that has 56 lots on it. Anything else? Anyone else? Any questions anywhere? It's late.
So should we have a counselor provide us with a motion?
Well, we want to show hands for the record, because we said with all those in favor. Oh, there's one in the back. Too late. Already got you. Okay. That's right. Applicant accepted. We understand. We understand you're in favor. And okay, and all those opposed. Okay. Just one hand, please. One hand to a couple. Hold him up high. He's a lawyer, not a mathematician.
Four.
Might have to take his shoes off.
Yeah. 24.
24.
And we do recognize that there were a greater number of folks.
All right.
There.
In that case, we'll entertain a motion at this time.
Can
yeah.
Please be entered into the record.
The list of folks that signed in will be.
Oh, yeah.
The
that's yeah, that's yeah. part of the record.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of, I just want to make clear, it's record to be left open for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. No, we got that, right? The Sussex Conservation District letter concerning grandfathering and the TOA with the applicant's response plus 20 days from the announcement at Planning and Zoning that that's been received for public comment on those items alone, right? Is that what?
Yeah. Normally you announce at the time of the closing of the meeting the amount of time you're going to give the opposition or the applicant to provide comments.
Well, we've got, in this case, we've got
receipt of comments.
Yeah, DelDOT, they're going to drive that, and then the applicants are going to respond. I would assume that they're going to do that in a timely manner to keep moving forward.
Yeah, right.
And then, so that it's fair to the public, it ought to be 20 days from the date it's announced at some meeting. I mean, if we get it on a Friday after a Thursday, and then we don't have a meeting for 2 weeks.
The same thing should apply. We should put it on the agenda, yeah. Announce that that period is closed, and now begins the public comment period.
Right.
But it's written comments.
Written comments on those issues.
Yeah. You want to put that in the form of a motion?
Mr. Johnson, is that your motion?
Yes, my motion is for deferral and leaving the record open for the receipt of the information from the Soil Conservation District, whether it's grandfathered, and second for the leaving the record open for the information from DelDOT concerning the TOA.
Plus the applicant's response.
Allowing for the applicants to respond to both of those, as well as leaving the record open for public written comments
for 20 days after announcing the receipt of those documents.
Yes.
Yeah.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to defer action on change of zone number 1759 Osprey Point D LLC, leaving the record open for the items stated in the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Mr. Lang, is there anything else for the good of the order this evening?
It's been a pleasure being here, sir.
As always, it's a pleasure to serve the people of Sussex County. We stand adjourned. Peace.